You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
In Play Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. In Play Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Hello everyone, welcome along. Week number 15 in the National Football League. Dave Kellner here with Beating the Book podcast host Gil Alexander on the line stateside on this Friday morning to take a look through the televised games ahead of week number 15 in the National Football League. Good to have you with us here. And first of all, a warm welcome, a very good morning to Mr. Gil Alexander. How are you doing, Gil?
Always a kind introduction. I'm doing very well, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. The last few weeks have been nightmarish from a punting perspective, Gil, for me personally. And I've dropped out playing this super challenge over here, Gil, and I've dropped through the floor recently. So I don't think stamina's my forte, Gil.
Well, you know, I was 2-3 in my super contest over here in the States the last 2 weeks as well. And on the season, I am 55% against the spread, which in real life is great. But in a contest the size of the one that I'm in, there's no chance. You know, I have no chance at 55% because someone always soars and does between 65 to 70%. Someone just catches fire over a course of a season. So 55%, great in real life, not going to get it done in a contest. So I'm with you, 2-3 the last couple weeks. Not fun.
Let's hope we go a little bit better this week, Gil. And we'll start off, as we always do, with a reflection on the Thursday night game and the St. Louis Rams beating the Tampa Bay Buccaneers by 31 points to 23. And Tavon Austin had a big night, Gil. One of those players that sometimes can be described as maybe a luxury player, but when it all clicks, he can be seen to devastating effect in this league.
Yeah, I sat last Sunday with the creator of an advanced analytics football site called Football Outsiders. The gentleman's name is Aaron Schatz. I was with him in Las Vegas watching football. And Tavon Austin actually came up. This was before last night's game. And he said, according to his metrics, Tavon Austin is the worst wide receiver in football when it comes to catching the football, but in terms of rushing yardage, is by far the best. In terms of touches. And Tavon Austin is lightning in a bottle. That kid came out of college out of West Virginia, just amazing speed. He's shifty, and man, absolutely, when he gets it going, he is a tour de force. He's a force to be reckoned with, and last night we saw that in really what was a meaningless game other than the introduction of mustard on mustard uniforms for the Rams.
those are just terrible.
Just horrible. And the fact, really, that could be the final game in St. Louis. The big story with the Rams, there's three teams, for those who don't know, in the UK. The Rams, the Raiders, and the Chargers. Each is unhappy for varying reasons, always with the owners, that is, of their situation in their respective cities. And the big vacuum to be filled is the city of Los Angeles, which does not have a football team. The NFL commissioner is, much like he wants a team in London, has been pining to have not one but two teams in Los Angeles, where the residents of Los Angeles couldn't care less, by the way, I should mention.
Yeah, and does it look like the Rams are likely to be uprooted then, Gil, and sent to Los Angeles?
Well, it depends who you ask, you know, because only two of those three are going, but the Rams have been in L.A. before. They used to be the L.A. Rams before they moved to St. Louis. I'm actually old enough where I can remember when they were the L.A. Rams. They were very competitive as that franchise, so they're as good a guess as any. The Chargers and Raiders obviously geographically have it easier to make the move, but I don't know that that is the deciding factor ultimately.
Okay, let's get stuck into this weekend's televised matches here in the UK then, and we'll start with the Carolina Panthers at the New York Giants. This is a 6 p.m. start here in the UK on Sunday evening. The Panthers 10-21, the Giants are 7-4, and the spread here, Gil, has settled at 4.5. The Panthers -4.5 at 10-11, the Giants +4.5 at 10-11, and the total points line is set at 48. The under is 10-11, and the over is 10-11. A few people out there, Gil, might be still clutching the unbeaten season prop ticket, and the Carolina Panthers are 13-0. But if you listen closely to what Ron Rivera is saying, he doesn't seem that interested in making sure this team go unbeaten. It's all about the Super Bowl. But is that smoke and mirrors, Gil? Because obviously these players will want to go 16-0 this season.
Well, you know, I guess the honest answer to that, Dave, is we really don't know yet. You know, we don't. There's been 8 teams during the Super Bowl era that have been 13-0. There have only been 3 that have gone 14-0. That's the perfect season Miami Dolphins of 1972, still the only season in NFL history that went coast-to-coast, beginning to end as a spotless season, perfect 17-0. The 2007 Patriots, who ended up having a perfect regular season but lost in the Super Bowl to these New York Giants in famous upset fashion. And then there was the 2009 Colts, who were in just this very position that the Panthers were in. They went 14-0 and then elected to sit all their starters. They were much more concerned with the long game, if you will, than they were with the short game of going undefeated in the regular season, because really the Panthers' decision, as the Colts made at that time, the Panthers' decision is, do we risk injury here? Going for this undefeated regular season at the very least, or maybe the perfect season altogether, or do we go for it? Do we go for it all? Injury, risk injury or not, that is the decision. And you're right, Ron Rivera is speaking like they want to rest players, and I guess we have that personified by the fact that running back Jonathan Stewart will be sitting out of this game. Either Fozzie Whitaker or Mike Tolbert will start in his place. And Rivera's saying all the coachy kinds of things, but if you're a human being playing for a 13-0 team, you gotta think you want to make history, don't you?
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you, Gil? And I suppose whether Greg Olsen takes to the field or not will be interesting as well, because he's been cited as a doubt prior to this contest, and obviously he has been Cam Newton's primary target throughout the course of most of the season, Gil. Ted Ginn Jr. stepped up last week anyway, and made a couple of big grabs. But Ted Ginn Jr., his hands, he looks uncertain. When he gets the ball in his hands, obviously dynamic and electric, but catching the ball has been a problem for him.
Yeah, Ted Ginn Jr., thank you for bringing that up, Dave. I was knocked out of my fantasy playoffs because Ted Ginn Jr. destroyed me. my opponent had him. Horrible. But yes, if Greg Olsen will be a great barometer. If Olsen does not play, then I think we have our answer. Right, the Panthers are taking every precaution necessary, but that is Cam Newton's security blanket. But here's the key with Cam Newton this season. Leads the league with 20 touchdowns in the red zone. 7 of those are rushing scores. He's going to be up against the second worst pass rush in the league with the Giants, who do have 16 sacks, by the way. But they, which is not a whole bunch, is what I'm saying. They have 16 sacks, so they're not a great pass rush. Second worst in the league. And the key with Cam Newton this season, besides those red zone numbers, in the clutch, and I get this from Mike Sando over at ESPN, who I unabashedly always lean on for these amazing stats, in the clutch, which is defined as games in the fourth quarter or overtime when team trails by 0 to 8 points, so either tied or trail all the way up to 8 points, one score, Newton is the number one quarterback in football this season with a 97 total QBR score. That's out of 100. He's 19 for 26 for 291 yards in those situations with 3 touchdowns and no picks. He has been impeccable in the clutch, if we define that as in the clutch. And that, more than anything, besides the great Panthers defense, of course, is why this team is undefeated and really in a position to make history. This matchup is, in particular, is going to be interesting for 2 reasons. One, the Giants are this historical David versus Goliath. Not only do they beat the Patriots in that 2007 Super Bowl when the Patriots were undefeated going in. They were 18-0 going into that game, looking for the perfect 19-0 season, and the Giants upset them. But when the Broncos were 13-0 in the late 90s, it was these Giants that knocked them off. So they have a history of doing that. This is Odell Beckham Jr. versus Josh Norman. It's the matchup that everyone's waiting to see. It's marquee. Odell Beckham Jr. just lighting the world on fire on offense. But Josh Norman of the Panthers, and this is why when they talk about MVP voting, should Cam Newton be the MVP? It's kind of tough to go with Cam despite all those great things I mentioned about him, because this defense, it's almost a disrespect to the Panthers' defense. Josh Norman, who's expected to be the primary cover on Odell Beckham Jr., he has yet to let a receiver catch more than four balls or gain more than 36 yards this season.
Wow.
Which is amazing. I mean, that's an amazing stat. Norman has 16 passes defensed to rank seventh in the league, and opposing quarterbacks have just a 50.5 passer rating against him. Now, that's out of 150, so that is really low. That's the sixth best among players targeted at least 39 times. And just to give you a one-on-one example, Julio Jones, the standout wide receiver of the Atlanta Falcons, he could only muster four catches for 33 yards when he matched up against Josh Norman. And Jones, in getting those four catches for 33 yards, became the first receiver in the last 11 games to catch more than two passes against Norman, who's only allowed two touchdowns all year. So Beckham has 12 touchdowns himself. Something's got to give. What a great matchup. If nothing else, you should watch this game for that matchup.
Yeah, the winner of that battle could go some way, Gil, to determining which team wins the war, because that is going to be absolutely sensational watching those two stars go head-to-head on Sunday at 6 p.m. What's the pick here then, Gil?
In my pick six video that I do for William Hill UK, this is my sixth-ranked pick. I like Carolina giving the 4.5 on the road. Now, this had some line movement. This actually opened at six, and money came in on the Giants. But it is Carolina at 4.5 as we do this show here about 48 hours before game time. I'm going to go with Carolina. I think they get it to 14-0. I could see a scenario where they win by a field goal. Listen, I could see a scenario where the Giants get the upset, too, if Carolina doesn't want to play Olsen, and then at some point in the game, if they're trailing, they make a decision to sit people. That's always a wonder with the Panthers. But at this point, I mean, they beat the Falcons 38-0 last week. There is nothing that we've actually seen on the field that leads us to believe that the Panthers can't get it done here, and I'm going with the Panthers.
Good stuff. Thank you, Gil. The Denver Broncos at the Pittsburgh Steelers is next up. This is 9:25 p.m. UK time on Sunday. The Broncos on the money line are 12-5. The Pittsburgh Steelers are 5-14. And this line is currently 6.5 here with William Hill. The Broncos plus 6.5 at 20-21. And the Steelers minus 6.5 at 20-23. This is a battle in the AFC. The Broncos 10-3 and first in the AFC West, while the Steelers are sitting at 8-5 and a second in the AFC North. I'm looking forward to this matchup, Gil, because we have the league's best defense against the most informed offense in the league. And it's a line that has moved considerably during the week as well, Gil.
Well, you know, I have it as opening at 6.5, and it remains at 6.5. But, yeah, it's a kind of volatile line in that, you know, there are some sevens with extra with reduced juice, 6.5s with extra juice. So it's going to be interesting to see where this settles. But really, you know, this is about the fact that it's Brock Osweiler against Ben Roethlisberger. Let's take your matchup to begin with. The number one defense in the NFL in the Denver Broncos, giving up just 4.3 yards per play. The number one offense in the Steelers, gaining 6.4 yards per play. That is the ultimate something has got to give between in that matchup. The way I see this, the Steelers' offense is the one that's going to prevail, not because the Broncos' defense will melt, but because I just don't think Brock Osweiler is going to be able to sustain drives. The Steelers have been great against the run. Their weakness has been in their pass defense, but Osweiler has not shown the ability to get the ball downfield. Now, he was failed by a couple of his receivers last week. Vernon Davis dropped a huge pass. Demaryius Thomas didn't do him any favors either. But Osweiler can't throw the ball downfield. That game against the Raiders, it's almost as if he doesn't even try most of the time to get it downfield. And if you can't stretch it, there's going to be some three and outs. And at some point, your defense, they're human, they're going to wear out. And against the Steelers offense, which is averaging 35.2 points per game over their last five games, averaging 494 yards of offense per game over that stretch, and Big Ben with 363 yards passing over that stretch, I mean, that's going to be tough because, listen, the Steelers in that stretch, you know, they played the Bengals. The Bengals have allowed 16.9 points per game versus everyone else. Keep in mind, in this five-game stretch, the Steelers have scored at least 30 in each of them, which is their longest streak as a franchise to score 30 points or more in each of them. But the Bengals against everyone else, these are their opponents over those five, they give up just 16.9 points per game. The Seahawks give up just 17.1 points per game versus everyone else, but the Steelers scored over 30. The Raiders give up just 24 points per game versus everyone's. Colts, 25.9 points per game versus everyone else. Browns, 27.3 points per game versus everyone else. So really, the Steelers have done it against a couple, maybe three, but certainly two really good defenses. So the Broncos just have to figure out a way to keep their offense on the field, and I don't see them doing it.
Yeah, the Steelers definitely the pick there, -6.5 for Gill at 20-23. Just to pick up on a couple of points you made there, Gill, when talking about Osweiler, didn't look to go deep down the field against Oakland. Obviously, Oakland came back from 12 points down in that game to win by 15 points to 12. He had to throw 51 times in that match, Gill. Is that Gary Kubiak putting too much pressure on an inexperienced quarterback?
I think what happened was this. Kubiak secretly, and I've not made any bones about this on your show, secretly Kubiak, you know, is like, oh, God, I'm straddled with Peyton Manning. He's the veteran. He's the star. I can't really implement my offense. I have to do what Peyton's doing. And as soon as Osweiler was able to play, he was able to implement his offense. Short passing, emphasis on the running game. And I think defenses, because Peyton showed no ability to get the ball downfield, initially defenses respected Brock Osweiler, and the running game for the Broncos was able to thrive. Well, when Osweiler showed that he's the perfect fit for the Kubiak's offense, not only because he can do some stuff that Kubiak wants him to do, but that he actually fits into it so well because he can't even throw the ball downfield himself, defenses started not to respect the run again. And so I think the Broncos' running game, which had two games of, you know, a flash of excellent performance there, I think that's all it is. They've gone back to being inept. I mean, C.J. Anderson, though he's expected to play with an ankle injury this weekend after he was sidelined against the Raiders, Broncos had 21 carries for 34 yards against the Raiders yesterday. I mean, that is just awful. And C.J. Anderson's not going to single-handedly make a huge difference there. And again, the Steelers are really good against the run. So he's going to have to rely on Osweiler, whether it's by design or not. And you know, you're talking about a guy who's, what, in his fourth start here in his career?
Yeah.
Big Ben and the Steelers are relentless. That offense is too good, and the Broncos just aren't going to be able to keep up.
Steelers -6.5. And Peyton Manning, Gill, back in training now, won't be ready to go on Sunday. Gary Kubiak is going to have a decision to make in the not-too-distant future, Gill. Which way do you see... Yeah, he's not going to like that. Which way do you see him going?
Well, let me tell you, we would all want to be flies on the wall of that decision. because, listen, this is Peyton Manning's last season. For all we know, this is his last season either way. And he was brought to the Broncos franchise to be the guy. And he has led them to a Super Bowl a couple years back, which they lost in horrible fashion. But, you know, if Peyton Manning is ready to go, and Brock Osweiler is not setting NFL records in his stead, I don't see how they keep Peyton Manning off the field. I don't see how you can do that as a franchise. These are the games that are ultimately the most important. Now, listen, I don't think Peyton's going to make a stink here during the regular season, but once these playoffs start, are you kidding me? Oh, man. Could you imagine if they tried telling Peyton Manning they were going to play Brock Osweiler? Don't think Osweiler is doing enough to make a case for himself.
No, in his last season, that would be a bitter pill for Peyton Manning to swallow, Gill, and I don't see it happening either, to be honest. What do you think would be the right decision for the franchise, for them to give them the best opportunity to win? Is it Manning or is it Osweiler?
Well, that's a great question, because I was on the Raiders last week against the Broncos, and I always say to people, and this applies to fourth down situations as well, what's the right call to make? So whether it's a fourth down situation, whether it's whether to play Osweiler versus Manning, I think the best barometer is if you are a fan of the opposing team, that's or you are a better of the opposing team, because as a better, fading the Broncos last week, being on the Raiders, I could tell you that in my heart of hearts, I was much happier having Brock Osweiler under center in that final drive than I would have been having Peyton Manning. And that, to me, is the real way to determine what's the call, if you have money or if you're a fan of the opposing team, because there is no truth serum that's any better than that. And I was thrilled that it was Osweiler. So for me, they're better off having Manning. I know he has been awful. I know he has a dead arm. But if you're asking me who could be better over a one or a two-game stretch or a three-game stretch at the most in the playoffs, I got to go Manning, as bad as he's been.
Thank you, Gil. That's the Denver Broncos at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Gil going with the Steelers minus 6.5. Prime time now. The Arizona Cardinals at the Philadelphia Eagles is the Sunday night game. Early hours of Monday morning here in the UK, 1:30 a.m. start time. The Cardinals are 4-7 on the money line. The Philadelphia Eagles in the market at 31-20. And the spread here, 3.5. The Cardinals minus 3.5 at even money. The Eagles plus 3.5 at 5-6. Gil, has there been any line movement here?
Yeah, it opened at 4, and it's at 3.5 now, and you'll see some threes even propping up with extra juice. So there has been a little movement in favor of the Eagles. Be interesting to see where that settles come game time on Sunday. Cardinals haven't been as good on the road as they have been at home. They did get wins in these games, but they struggled at Cleveland and they struggled at San Francisco. So by that very simplistic barometer, you would think they would struggle here against the Eagles, and maybe that has as much to do with this spread being at 3 or 3.5 as anything, as opposed to being higher. But the Eagles are kind of this team that played up to competition this year and played down to competition as well. They're 4-3 are the Eagles straight up against teams who enter the game 500 or better, but they're only 2-4 against teams who entered the game with a sub-500 record. So maybe this is a team that brings the juices or gets the juices flowing for the Eagles. Listen, I think the best thing to understand about these games, and this applies to Pittsburgh and Denver, which we just spoke about as well, is for having 3 weeks left in the NFL season, we have a remarkably clear picture of the playoffs already. Not necessarily in terms of seeding, but in terms of which teams will actually participate. In the case of the Cardinals, they've already clinched a playoff berth. They can clinch a division and potentially a first-round bye if they win and Green Bay loses this weekend. Philadelphia, though, is in the one division where we don't know who's coming out, the NFC East. Philadelphia in a three-way tie with the Giants and the Redskins, but they hold their playoff destiny in their hands. So this is huge for the Eagles, not quite as big for the Cardinals, obviously, because they're in no matter what,
yeah.
But they're jockeying for position themselves. So really going to be an interesting game with that spectacular Arizona offense going up against Philly here.
Start by talking about Philly, Gil, because we've discussed Chip Kelly as head coach and general manager pretty much every single time we've talked about the Eagles this season. And it appeared that the players at one point had turned it in for the season and they weren't going to perform for Kelly. But as you mentioned, they've had big wins against New England and Buffalo recently, and they're now back in the mix. It's difficult to assess the Eagles when it comes to the end of the season, whether they make the playoffs or not. It will be difficult to assess the kind of season they've had with Chip Kelly as head coach.
I think it will be also because it's difficult to assess their starting quarterback, Sam Bradford, right off the top. Listen, I'm on record as saying I think Chip Kelly, the general manager, really screwed up Chip Kelly, the head coach.
Yeah.
I think they made some personnel moves that were just awful. And, you know, they're 6-7, which on the one hand is not a good record. On the other hand, you know, for what they went through personnel-wise, might not be the worst thing in the world. And if they make the playoffs, you know, they say winning is the best tonic. That'll make all the stink go away, Will winning. And I think that they still have a way to wrap this up in a nice little bow and make Chip Kelly, the coach, look okay. But he's tough to assess because Sam Bradford's tough to assess. People love to bash Bradford. you know, first of all, he's very brittle. He's hurt a lot. And when he plays, you know, was he worth trading for? He hasn't been fabulous. But listen, for as great as accolades as we can throw on Carson Palmer, and believe me, he's an MVP candidate, Carson Palmer, 4,003 yards, 31 touchdown passes, both single-season franchise records for the Cardinals, trailing only Tom Brady in both categories, 107.2 passer rating, second only to Russell Wilson. But Sam Bradford has been blitzed at the second lowest rate this season, 18% of dropbacks. But he's 5-0 this season when teams blitz him on at least 20% of dropbacks, is Sam Bradford. And the Cardinals happen to blitz, Dave, at the highest rate of any team this season, 48% of dropbacks. So this could be a great matchup for him. And keep in mind, Bradford and the Eagles, listen, the Eagles are 6-2 in games when Bradford started this year and finished.
Yep.
So quietly, you know, he's actually been really good. They're 0-5 when he's not starting and finishing. But when he starts and finishes, they're 6-2. He has 5 touchdown passes and just 1 pick in his last 4 games. And let's give him the respect he deserves by the numbers.
And you mentioned the Arizona Cardinals and their offense and their deep threat, Gil. They're always going to take numerous shots down the field. Do Philadelphia have the players in the secondary to combat that?
Well, not really. And Byron Maxwell looks like he may not play in this game. Their standout cornerback, by the way, Patrick Peterson might not play for the Cardinals, their cornerback, their star cornerback as well. I don't think it's a particularly good matchup for the Eagles, no, to answer your question, particularly because in all those great numbers we mentioned about Carson Palmer, and I'll get this one from Mike Sando as well. I'll dig deep because you ask here, Dave. Carson Palmer and total QBR now, let's keep in mind, scored between 0 and 100. 50 is an average game. But Carson Palmer's had a QBR of 50 or better in every game this season. And you say to yourself, well, I mean, is that particularly interesting? Well, only Tom Brady in 2007, the Patriots' 18-0 season and then losing in the Super Bowl in 2007, did that for a whole season. 10-year history of QBR. Brady has 3 sub-50 QBR games this season, by point of comparison. Cam Newton, for instance, has 6 sub-50 total QBR games this season. But Sando reporting that Palmer, 50 or better in every game this season. So if he can get through the season doing that, it's kind of historical. It's only the only comp for it is Tom Brady in 2007. He's been that consistent, and they get the ball downfield. They lead the NFL, do the Cardinals and Palmer, with 59 passes of 20 yards or more, including 10 for touchdowns. Now think about that. 59, 11-2 are the Cardinals, 13 games. 59 divided by 13, a little quick math, roughly 4.5 times a game they're completing passes for 20 yards or more. That's a lot. Yeah. To defend, and I don't think the Eagles ultimately have the ability to stop that long term. Can they do it over the course of a game? We're about to find out.
I'm guessing you just got a lean here, Gil, and not a play in this one.
That's correct. I mean, I would lean Cardinals here, but it's a very slight lean. The guys on my show love the over in this game, and they love the Cardinals. I'm not too quick to do that because the Cardinals, for whatever reason, the show doesn't travel quite as well. And the Eagles just have this, as you point out, the strange sort of volatility to them where you just don't know quite what you're getting with them from week to week. And they do control their destiny. The one thing with the Eagles, next week is their big game when they host the Redskins, two teams tied atop the NFC East.
Yes.
So really, even if the Eagles were to drop this game, well, I guess there's the Giants also to consider. But really, next week is their big game. So, I don't know. Tough game to call, but my guys on my show, for what it's worth, will lean Cardinals.
That's the Sunday night game. Monday night football is the Detroit Lions at the New Orleans Saints. The Lions 27-20, the Saints 20-31, and the spread here set at 3. The Lions plus 3, 10-11. The Saints minus 3 at 10-11. And I think you've encapsulated what this contest means to many football fans out there. I take it these games must be predetermined pre-season, are they, Gil?
Yes, the Monday night games are always determined pre-season, and really the Sunday night games are as well. But a few years ago, at least with the Sunday night games, they instituted a flexibility where networks can sort of trade games for the better good and Sunday games, in essence, can improve matchup-wise late in the season. But no such luck with the Monday games. It's too much of a logistical nightmare to change that out for all the planning purposes of a game being on Monday. And this is just, I mean, honestly, can I go home early?
It is one of those games where the matchup doesn't matter at all because neither of these two sides have any opportunity to make the playoffs, the postseason. I actually want to talk about the head coaches here, Gil, because that's the most interesting aspect of this matchup, I think, anyway. Because Jim Caldwell in Detroit, I think they'd have to do something spectacular in these final three games, even though all three are winnable, for him to keep his job. And maybe we're starting to question whether Sean Payton, his time is coming to an end at the New Orleans Saints as well, because this will be two seasons back-to-back in which they've not got a winning record, or they're not going to finish the season with a winning record. So it's intriguing from that aspect, I suppose.
It is, and already this season, and this is in season now, which is rare, but the Lions, during this season, fired their general manager, Martin Mayhew. Obviously, offensive coordinator change has been made with Jim Bob Cooter that we've talked about before. And with the Saints, they fired, famously, Rob Ryan, their defensive coordinator, in place, and Dennis Allen is now coordinating their defense in his place. So they've already made changes during the season. And yes, the head coaches are really the story now. How, you know, these guys have managed to keep their jobs in the meantime. But in the case of Jim Caldwell with the Lions, I wonder if you guys have this equivalent sort of athlete in the Premier League, for instance. A player whose facial expression makes it seem like they're not alive. And we have, you know, in baseball, Robinson Cano is a great example. A guy who's so smooth, and when he's playing well, you're like, man, look how smooth Robinson Cano is. But then when he's playing poorly, you immediately, because of this facial expression where it looks like he doesn't care, you immediately default to, man, does he really even want to be playing? Look at him. You know, we have players like that in every league. Jay Cutler's face always shows, you know, always seems to convey that he doesn't care. Eli Manning's face always seems to convey that he's confused. Well, Jim Caldwell's face seems to convey that he's not even present on the sidelines, right, that he's falling asleep. And so I think in times when his team is going 14-0, he was the head coach of the 2009 Colts, which we talked about earlier. When things are going good, you say, oh, look at that, calm through the storm of a 14-0, you know, schedule. Man, he really doesn't show any stress. But when he's the coach of the Lions and they're 4-9, you immediately shift to, this guy doesn't know what he's doing.
I'm trying to think, while you've been talking there, I've been trying to think of players in the Premier League that convey that. I'm sure someone listening will be able to tweet me one. I can't think of one off the top of my head, unfortunately, Gil, because I'd love to be able to make a comparison this side of the pond, but I can't think of one off the top of my head. It is intriguing,
yeah,
though.
It's just, you know, we as human beings, for whatever reason, we process, at least I do. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself, Dave. At least I think we're guilty of that. In the case of the Saints with Sean Payton, look, they've won a Super Bowl with Sean Payton and Drew Brees. So, you know, Payton can retire happy. You know, if you win a Super Bowl, you've won a Super Bowl. No one can ever take that away from you. But, yeah, I mean, look, they're 5-8. Drew Brees is about 117 years old at this point. He's been just a spectacular player. He's a Hall of Famer. Of course, I'm kidding. He's in his late 30s. But, you know, look, there's been rumors that the Saints will trade. They will entertain offers to trade Sean Payton, which is, you know, the ultimate rare thing to do is to include a head coach in a trade, which, by the way, it is allowed. You can do that. You can trade a head coach for draft picks. And I think the Saints are seriously considering that option. I think rumors, you know, look, rumors don't come from, you know, a complete abyss. There is some truth behind that. I think they're entertaining a possible off-season trade of Sean Payton. I really do.
And he could end up, it's not inconceivable that he could end up at the Detroit Lions, because he's a longtime friend of the Lions interim coach, isn't he? Interim general manager, Sheldon White. They were together at Miami University back in the mid-90s. So not inconceivable that he could end up in Detroit next season.
Well, that is good knowledge, Dave Kellner. Wow.
I have read that somewhere, Gil. I can't remember where I read it, but I read it on one of the the websites that preview the matches.
You are doing your homework. By the way, if your audience doesn't appreciate your efforts and your research and stuff before shows, they should. That is a very good point. I will tell you where I think Sean Payton is more likely to end up, and this is kind of out of, not out of completely out of left field, but only so because their coach is under contract, which is Dallas.
Right.
I think Jerry Jones has a bit of a fixation with Sean Payton, always has. And so I think that would be the spot. And by the way, I think Sean Payton himself, there's a big difference between going from New Orleans to Detroit and going from New Orleans to Dallas. Dallas will always be viewed as a marquee coaching job, no matter how poorly they play. And so I think that's perhaps a team he ends up with, if in fact New Orleans tries to let him go in whatever method.
We've managed to do about 5 or 6 minutes without actually talking about the spread here, Gil, which I think has been an effort on both our parts. Have you got any view on the actual matchup?
I don't, and I think this is one of those games where, and I've said this before, the William Hill UK folks like me to have a pick in this game, but listen, I'd be doing everybody a disservice if I made a pick in this game. New Orleans, I do a guessing line show at the beginning of the week, and I said, it's got to be New Orleans by 3, and it's the bookmaker's way of telling you they don't know either. And the gentleman across from me, who's been a bookmaker for 30 years in Nevada, said that's exactly right. That's why it's a 3-point spread. New Orleans is 3, they're a home team. But listen, New Orleans has the worst defense in the NFL by any measure. They're last in yards per play allowed, 6.5. They're last in yards per rushing attempt allowed, 5.0. They're last in yards per pass attempt allowed, 8.1. Opposing quarterbacks have a 114.2 passer rating against the Saints while throwing just 6 interceptions. That's out of 158. That's a really good passer rating and very few interceptions gotten by the Saints. 2,609 snaps. This is from Mike Sando at ESPN, this part. 2,609 snaps on defense by rookies for the Saints this season. That's 30% of their total snaps on defense. That 2,609 snaps is by far the most in the league by over 700 snaps.
Wow.
So that, more than anything, gives you an indication as to why they're struggling. And so, you know, if you take out that gun and put it to my head and make me want to have a lean, I'll absolutely take the 3 points for the Lions against that defense, but I could just as easily see Drew Brees going nuts against the Lions as well. So that spread's where it ought to be, but, you know, lean, give me the points, I guess.
Thank you, Gil. We've been through the 4 televised matches this weekend. All is left is for you to give us your 5 best bets this weekend for week number 15, Gil.
Yeah, we've covered at least one of them, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is definitely one of my picks, giving 6.5, hosting the Denver Broncos. I really like that Pittsburgh offense to just kind of run away from the Broncos defense. I think the Broncos keep it close first half. Pittsburgh runs away with it in the second. They're pick number 1. Pick number 2, Houston Texans, going up against the Indianapolis Colts. We still don't know if it's going to be Matt Hasselbeck or Charlie Whitehurst for the Colts in this game. It certainly will not be Andrew Luck. I just think this is the game where Houston's defense shines. I think they're going to be great in this game. I think J.J. Watt, Brian Cushing and company get it done in a game for the lead in the AFC South. Both of those teams are 6-7, so Houston is my second pick. Third pick, these are the big chalk ones. I like Seattle Seahawks giving 15 points against the Cleveland Browns. Listen, you're not going to survive long-term given all those kinds of points in any game in the NFL, but this is arguably the biggest mismatch in the league. If you could concoct one in your head, you'd probably say, let's throw Cleveland into Seattle, and I think this is it. Russell Wilson has just been spectacular, arguably the best 4-game stretch, not only in his career for sure, but maybe by the numbers in NFL history. That's how good he's been. So I like Seattle giving all those points. I actually like New England giving 2 touchdowns at home against Tennessee. And really, I don't need to elaborate there. I just think Tom Brady and company get it done against a far inferior team. And then pick number 5, and I'm stalling because it's always hard to remember what the 5th one is as I go around. Oh, yes. The 5th game is the first game chronologically. There's a standalone game Saturday night between the Jets and the Cowboys. I like the Jets giving 3 points at Dallas. Dallas has no motivation anymore to play. Yes, they're mathematically still alive, but really, for all intents and purposes, they're done. The Jets are in the heart of the American Football Conference wild card race. And the Cowboys offense, this really comes down to the Cowboys offense against the Jets D. Dave, I don't know how the Cowboys are going to score. I don't. I have no idea. They're worst offense in the NFL. So I like the Jets giving three from that perspective as well. So it's the Steelers, the Texans, the Seahawks, the Patriots, and the Jets. Those are my five.
Super. Always one of the best parts of my week talking to you on this podcast, Gil. Thank you for your company. Make sure you check out Gil's podcast as well, at Beating the Book. They're all tweeted out on Twitter via that handle. Gil, thank you for your company, and we'll catch up soon.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.